Welcome to Eye to Eye, the podcast of the Royal College of Ophthalmologists. My name is Sunil Mamtora, and I will be your host.
Today I'm speaking with Sohaib Rufai, an NIHR, Doctoral Fellow and Academic Registrar in Leicester, and we're going to be talking about the topic of handheld OCT. Sohaib, thank you very much for talking to me about all the work you've been doing on this topic, which I know is a lot. Just to start with, would you be able to just tell the listeners a bit about your journey and how you got into this research?
Thank you so much, Sunil. It's really an honour to be on the Royal College Eye to Eye podcast. So thank you for having me. I started off in 2016. I was very fortunate to get the NIHR Academic Clinical Fellowship in Leicester, where the expertise was handheld OCT. And my post was supervised by Professor Irene Gottlob, Dr. Frank Proudlock, and Dr. Mervyn Thomas. So I was very lucky to get this opportunity and learn all about handheld OCT. This was at ST1 level in my ophthalmology training, so I was doing a mixture of clinical and academic training. And it was at this point I learned all about image acquisition, analysis, and mainly I was focusing on nystagmus. And then fast forward 3 years to 2019, after completing a large project using handheld OCT in nystagmus and foveal hyperplasia, I was very lucky to get an NIHR doctoral fellowship grant to use handheld OCT in children at risk of raised intracranial pressure. And I'm collaborating with Great Ormond Street for this research project, approaching the end of it now. I'm in the final year. So that's pretty much how I've ended up spending so many years using handheld OCT.
Everybody knows about OCT and we use it so widely in ophthalmology now. But what's the difference in the technology between handheld OCT and conventional, say, tabletop OCT?
Sure. So just as a kind of refresher, OCT, as you know, has totally revolutionized the clinical practice of ophthalmology. It's non-invasive. You get incredible 3D images of the optic nerve and the retina. You can also use it for the anterior segment. And you get these within seconds without the need for dilating drops. It doesn't touch the eye. The detail is absolutely amazing. The OCT I'm using gives you detail down to 3 micrometers. And it's the best analogy is it's like optical ultrasound. So the way ultrasound uses sound waves, OCT, you use light waves. So you aim an optical beam at this tissue of interest. The light is reflected back from structures beneath the surface, and then these are put together to construct the 3D image. So with the handheld device, all they've really done is stripped down the technology. So they've removed, if you imagine the tabletop conventional OCT system, there's no chin rest system, there's no table. All the kind of accessories and appendages have been stripped down. So all you're left with is what looks like a hairdryer. That's the handheld OCT probe, and it's connected to the computer system via a long cable. This allows you to bring the OCT to the patient rather than bringing the patient to the OCT.
Okay. What about the cost implications of that? Is handheld OCT significantly more expensive than conventional OCT?
Just before answering this, I just want to state that I have no financial disclosures, as we'll be talking about different OCT systems. So the handheld OCT system I'm using is the Envisu C2300, manufactured by Leica Microsystems. And the last time I got a quote for this, which was a few years ago, it was in the region of €85,000. That may have changed. You need to obviously approach the company for a quote. Sure, there is still the cost barrier and there are other barriers to its widespread use. It's a relatively young science still, but it is truly a great device, particularly for the pediatric population who have otherwise been deprived of OCT technology because the tabletop systems are not designed for babies and young children.
You know, the first thing that comes to my mind when I think of doing an OCT on a child or a baby is the image quality or how easy that image acquisition process is going to be. Because sometimes even in adults, doing an OCT and getting patients to maintain fixation of the target can be tricky. So what's your experience of actually capturing images?
Absolutely. You're absolutely right, Sunil. There is a learning curve with the handheld OCT. It probably took me a few months to get really comfortable, just like learning any new skills such as indirect ophthalmoscopy and so on. The handheld OCT probe doesn't have a fixation target built in, first of all. Secondly, it doesn't have eye tracking. So you need an external fixation device. You need the child to be looking at something. And when they're really little, you know, you might have to use cartoons on a tablet, smartphone, their favorite toy. The parents can be very, very helpful for this to get them to fix. And you only need 2 seconds. So my acquisition time on my custom protocol is 1.9 seconds. So I need them to be fixing for 1.9 seconds in order to get the image of interest, optic nerve, fovea, mainly what I'm looking at. Really, there are lots of tips and tricks, such as using an external fixation device, having a second person, using the free run mode, which is a continuous scanning mode. So the second person, as soon as they see the structure of interest, they can capture that just by clicking a button. And this way, even if it's a little baby, undilated, looking around, as long as I've got the structure of interest in view, they can capture that in the previous 2 seconds. Does that make sense?
So that's almost like on a B-scan when you can just rewind the frames and select the captured frame of choice.
Absolutely, Sunil, that's right. And the other thing that I use often, I've got more comfortable with when I'm alone, I use the foot pedal. So it has an aim mode, and on aim mode, it's hooked up to the foot pedal. And as soon as I can see, I put the screen next to or behind the patient. As soon as I can see the optic nerve, for example, I just press the button on the foot pedal, and I can actually do the whole thing on my own without an assistant.
Okay, wow, that's quite impressive. You know, you mentioned nystagmus earlier. How does that work with nystagmus? Because, you know, I can imagine fast beating nystagmus being very tricky to capture OCT images in.
Absolutely. So the key with nystagmus, as I said, the acquisition time, if you keep that short, without degrading the image quality, 1.9 seconds seems to be really good. I have great quality OCTs showing foveal hyperplasia, which we can talk about. And the key is, if you look on the on-fast view, which is on the left-hand side of the screen, as long as the structure of interest, such as the fovea, that needs to be unbroken. So if that's unbroken, there's no motion artifact that is affecting your image of the fovea, you can use that central slice to have a look at the fovea, take measurements, grade foveal hyperplasia, for example. Same applies to the optic nerve. As long as you don't have motion artifact over this structure of interest, you can perform OCT with this device in nystagmus.
What got you really interested and passionate about handheld OCT, and, you know, what has your research found so far?
I started off, as I said, in 2016. And I was very, very fortunate to have the opportunity to use handheld OCT in infantile nystagmus. And this was a really unique cohort of children. So this whole, the opportunity excited me that I am able to lead this world first study in Leicester. Leicester was the first centre in Europe to obtain the handheld OCT back in 2012. So these were the first babies and preverbal infants to have handheld OCT and to be followed up years later at school age by myself. So they were recruited from 2012 onwards. I turned up 2016, was given the responsibility to lead this study. And I followed them up when they were old enough to get reliable visual acuities using a chart visual acuity, logMAR visual acuity. I was correlating the structural development, or rather underdevelopment, foveal hyperplasia in these children from their really early scans, they were babies or infants, and seeing if that predicts their future vision. And it did. Depending on how underdeveloped the fovea was in infancy, this gave the visual prognosis. So 5-6 years later, we could predict with pretty good accuracy what level of vision the child will see. And this is consistent with work from Mervyn Thomas. He's an NIHR clinical lecturer in Leicester. He actually developed this grading system for foveal hyperplasia. It's a 6-point grading system back in 2011, using tabletop OCT, mainly in adults and older children. So we took that grading system. I tweaked it very slightly, with grade 1 being subdivided into 1A and 1B, as suggested by Professor Joe Carroll's group in Wisconsin, based on their work in albinism. But otherwise, it's largely the same system. And we decided to call it the Lester grading system for foveal hyperplasia. And the exciting thing here is it's the first medical grading system named after the city of Leicester. So Bristol have their stool chart and Glasgow have the Glasgow Coma Scale. Now Leicester have a medical grading system as well. So, so this was so exciting. We could not only diagnose foveal hyperplasia, we can give a visual prognosis, tentative visual prognosis. We won't say that absolutely the child is going to be able to drive, the child is going to see 6/6. We can't say that with certainty, but we can say it's likely. Or if they... Now, this is the really important bit. We can grade the amount of foveal hyperplasia with handheld OCT in a baby with nystagmus, and it can guide our clinical management. For example, if the child has a fully developed fovea, or they have very mild foveal hyperplasia, but their visual acuity is really poor, and this is where we're pretty sure that this child isn't seeing well, whether it's when they're a toddler, a little bit older, we can see the VA measurements are uniformly poor. We know there's another problem. It's not the fovea. It's not explained at the retinal level. There is another problem that needs investigating and managing appropriately. It could be amblyopia, it could be refractive error, it could be other issues affecting other parts of the eye or brain. So this helps with clinical management. Now, if the child has a high grade of foveal hyperplasia and poor vision consistent with that, we know that's accounted for at the foveal level. Finally, keeping the child at the heart of all that we do, a visual prognosis can help the parents and family to make appropriate adjustments at this crucial age to optimise the child's education and development.
You've basically offered never done before prognostic indication in children who have got suspected foveal hyperplasia. You're able to actually give them a visual prognosis.
That's right, Sunil, and it's all thanks to Leicester, this great opportunity. I just think I'm very, very lucky to have had that opportunity and was in the right place at the right time, as it's such a long cohort study. But really, I have to thank Professor Irene Gottlob, Frank Proudlock and Mervyn Thomas, who guided and mentored me through this process and have helped me become more independent, because after that, I wrote my own NIHR grant application for a doctoral fellowship project in collaboration with Great Ormond Street, where I'm using those two for a totally different application now. I'm looking at the optic nerve head. Specifically, I'm trying to detect early changes related to raised intracranial pressure in at-risk children. And this is potentially sight-saving and even life-saving if this is missed. A child with raised intracranial pressure, this can severely damage the brain and vision. So I was so fortunate to actually get this when I applied in 2019. The NIHR gave me a grant of over £400,000 to run this project within a PhD fellowship with training and funding the entire research project. So I'm really fortunate to be doing that at the moment.
Yeah, that's an amazing opportunity. So using handheld OCT to potentially screen for raised intracranial pressure, how useful is the technology and how successful have you been?
In terms of the feasibility and repeatability, we have found that handheld OCT has really good feasibility in craniosynostosis. So craniosynostosis is characterized by the premature fusion of the cranial sutures. It's often associated with raised intracranial pressure. The gold standard method to measure the pressure in the skull is invasive. It involves putting a pressure monitor into the brain. So this involves GA and hospital admission, and it carries risk. So the idea is to use OCT as a surrogate measure for ICP, intracranial pressure. And this way, not only can we detect raised pressure with optic nerve head changes, but also it allows us to monitor children over time. to see if there are subtle changes. Because this whole process can be very insidious. The child may have slightly increasing intracranial pressure because the skull is not, some of the cranial sutures are fixed. It's not accommodating the growing brain, and intracranial hypertension can develop and potentially be missed between appointments if all you're doing is, for example, fundoscopy, which doesn't have very good sensitivity in young children with craniosynostosis. It's around 20 to 30% sensitivity. And then the gold standard method obviously involves an operation and the associated risks. So far, we've found good feasibility, good repeatability, where I've taken the same image, same child, same eye, more than one image, and then taken all the measurements and compared the two. The repeatability is very, very good in the sample of patients we looked at. And this has been published in Translational Vision Science and Technology, July 2021.
So, hey, you know, that's all really, really interesting. And it sounds as though handheld OCT has got a huge potential to then really improve the quality of life for these patients and potentially spare children from having hugely invasive procedures performed on them. You've done lots of work in both foveal hyperplasia and screening of raised intracranial pressure, but I'm sure handheld OCT has got so many other potential benefits and applications. Is there anything else that you're looking into, or do you have any ideas as to where you're going to take handheld OCT in the future?
I think this is a great time to mention that the journal Eye actually invited me to write an editorial on handheld OCT. Very, very fortunate to get this opportunity. And this has just been published a couple of days ago. So it's the January edition Eye Journal, Handheld Optical Coherence Tomography Removes Barriers to Imaging the Eyes of Young Children. Handheld OCT has been used to study the normal development of the fovea from birth to adulthood, and the optic nerve head from birth to adolescence. And both these studies were carried out in Leicester. It has also been used to study a wide range of conditions affecting the pediatric population, providing useful diagnostic information, permitting serial monitoring, guiding clinical management, and in many cases, overcoming unique challenges in certain patient groups. Handheld OCT can be used in premature infants. It is feasible and reliable in infantile nystagmus and associated conditions, foveal hyperplasia, albinism, achromatopsia, PAX6 mutation, SLC38A8 mutation, and it has been used in craniosynostosis, including syndromic forms often associated with developmental delay. It has been used in children with primary congenital glaucoma, anterior segment dysgenesis, optic nerve hyperplasia, retinal detachment, retinoschisis, retinoblastoma, optic pathway gliomas, and other ocular conditions. And finally, it has also been used in children with other conditions affecting the skull and brain, including microcephaly, cerebral malaria, and, this is a really cool part, I was very, very lucky to get this opportunity, I have used handheld OCT in craniopagus twins conjoined at the skull, successfully separated at Great Ormond Street. This was a world first. OCT examination has not yet been performed in craniopagus conjoined twins, but we've shown that with the handheld OCT device, we got very good quality images for these kids. The development was all normal foveal architecture, normal optic nerve heads. And this has also been published, Journal of Surgical Case Reports, last year.
Fantastic. So the OCT imaging in those twins was normal then?
Yes, it was.
That's good to know. So, Abe, I know that you're a passionate future paediatric ophthalmologist. Am I right? I think you are.
I think it's inevitable, really, that in one way or another, I will be continuing paediatric ophthalmology.
Yeah, and you know, the thought that's just come to my head is that handheld OCT potentially has many benefits and applications to the adult population as well as the pediatric population. Have you thought about this application, or do you have any ideas about how this might benefit non-pediatric patients?
Absolutely. So first of all, the conventional tabletop OCT system is not really compatible with non-ambulatory adults or adults with spinal abnormalities, or if for whatever reason they can't position their head on a chin rest, or they're bedbound, or they're in the ICU, for example, then the whole handheld OCT system is portable. So you can wheel it onto the ward, into the operating theatre. And it is used in these circumstances as well. Now, if you let your imagination run wild for a moment, I was thinking about this before our podcast. In the future, in the not too distant future, imagine a patient with age-related macular degeneration or diabetic retinopathy at home. They're given a special pair of goggles, put them on, and this kind of system can take fundus images, OCT images, send these virtually to the ophthalmologist, who can monitor the patient, or they can even, perhaps even monitor themselves with the help of AI and so on. And this way, patients can benefit from OCT and other forms of eye imaging at home. And I don't think that idea is too far-fetched, really, with technology becoming smaller and smaller and more affordable in the future.
Yeah, I mean, maybe those goggles can Wi-Fi connect to the port delivery system, which can release the anti-VEGF drug based on the imaging as well.
Sure. I mean, obviously, it sounds a bit bonkers now, but it's probably going to be happening in our lifetime.
I think I think technology always advances faster than we can ever potentially imagine it to do so.
Absolutely. And Sunil, probably there will be a better way of treating AMD and DMO and so on, better than sticking a needle into someone's eyeball and injecting an anti-VEGF agent. And I'm amazed that we still do that all the time, obviously with ways to keep the patient comfortable, but I'm sure there'll be better ways in the future.
I mean, for the sake of the trainees who are having to actually perform many of these injections, I really do hope so. But Saheb, that brings me on to just one question that I think is very important, is that, you know, how has the technology in handheld OCT changed over the last 5 years or so since you've started this research?
Of course. In recent years, there have been three commercial OCT systems developed, which you could classify as handheld or at least portable OCT systems, each with their own advantages and challenges. These are the Envisu device manufactured by Leica Microsystems, the iView system by OptiView, and the Spectralis Flex by Heidelberg. We have already discussed the Envisu system in detail, but I will add that in recent years we've become better at quantitative segmentation analysis using programs such as ImageJ. For instance, Leicester have developed an in-house protocol on ImageJ, which I've been able to modify specifically for my work and get precisely the measurements that I need. Next, there's the iView system by OptiView, which is essentially a stand-mounted unit with a 2.2 kilo removable scanner. This is a little heavier than the Envisu, which is a 1.5 kilo system, but works very nicely in theatre, for example, produces wonderful images, and offers automated segmentation. Last but not least, there's the Spectralis Flex, which is essentially the Spectralis OCT scanning unit mounted on a flexible arm. So this is not removable, but you can move the flexible arm a bit like a crane system or boom arm for the large camcorders used to make movies. So this gives you all the advantages of the widely used Spectralis system, including the fixation target, eye tracking, automated segmentation. It produces beautiful images. The entire system comes on wheels, but it is quite a large, heavy system that I think ideally needs two people to move around and comfortably acquire images with. In summary, three systems, each with their own advantages and challenges. Again, handheld and portable OCT is still a relatively young science with a very bright future.
Well, Saheb, that's been absolutely fascinating. Just one last question. Is that, do you think that a handheld OCT will become a mandatory piece of equipment or an essential piece of equipment for every eye clinic around the country in the not too distant future?
First of all, I believe OCT is truly an essential technology across the field of ophthalmology. Obviously, the vast majority of eye departments across the country own OCT systems, and OCT is even gaining a growing role in the community, for example, at many opticians. Personally, I believe that all patients should be able to have the benefits of OCT for diagnosis, management, and so on. So if the children who need it are not able to get it in that unit, very often they're referred. And this is really about the current barriers, because it's a relatively young science, still developing. There, you need special training to use it, special training and expertise with image analysis and so on. And there's the cost implications. So I think these are the barriers currently preventing it being totally widespread. But in the future, I don't see why not, once these barriers are overcome and when possibly it becomes easier for people to use faster. It would be ideal for all paediatric ophthalmology units to have a handheld OCT system so that all children can benefit from OCT.
Well, thank you, Sahib. That's been a really, really insightful interview.
Thank you so much, Sunil. Really enjoyed that. And again, I'm really happy to share the editorial in I. Perhaps I can give you the link, and if anyone wants to find out more, it has lots of useful references and so on.
For sure, we'll put a link in the show notes for that.